I saw a tweet about 2 months ago, and every time I look at it, I die laughing, but it's true. This, I don't remember who tweeted it, but he was like, if you mistype one thing on MMAP, you're going straight to jail. And it's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's so true. Like, you mistype that IP address, you are going to jail. Like, you need to know what you're doing. This is not just, oh,
yeah,
type, hack, hack, pew, pew, pew. Like, no, you need to know what you're doing. This is not a game. Like,
at my old company, we couldn't even use him. Welcome back to the Textual Talk. This is episode 50. I really appreciate everybody for really just supporting the channel. Y'all really been helping me grow. I appreciate all the love, all the messages, the comments you guys give me, sharing out the content. I really do appreciate it, man. So let's just keep it up. And, you know, my goal is just to help everybody learn about tech and also show representation while doing it. Now, today we have Miss Sierra, a.k.a. the Pentest Princess. And this is a pretty good episode, straightforward. She tells us how she wanted to be a nurse at first, but then she decided to do cybersecurity, working in the help desk, getting a cybersecurity job, and her experience being a Black woman in tech. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Funny, everybody who's listening right now probably say, man, is he finna talk about Xbox again? You're right. Because Sierra was on the game with us that night too when we was playing Gears of War. I don't know if she was getting carried like I was. I wasn't getting no kills.
You were getting all the kills. I was dying because, you know, our team was not helping us. So
No, it wasn't me. It was Eric's teammate that was getting all the kills.
Yeah.
I think I looked up a couple of rounds, but other than that, I didn't do too good. But maybe it was because, you know, I got the old Xbox One X, and now this morning I ordered finally my Series X, so it'll be coming sometime next week. But enough about that. Guys, we have the Pentest Princess with us, and it's actually an interesting name. It sticks out. I haven't seen too many Pentest Princesses. And so my new way asking everybody to introduce themselves is like, you know, who is the Pentest Princess?
Well, the Pentest Princess is a hacker at heart. I'm a security analyst by day, and I also dabble in pen testing. It's funny, I got that name the day that I got my Security Plus. I was celebrating, and I was trying to find like a cybersecurity adjacent Twitter handle for like months, and I just couldn't. Anything like I picked out, I was like, oh, I don't like that. And so literally after I passed my Security Plus, I was like, Pentest Princess. Like, it just came in my head, and I was like, I like that. That's a nice name. So I just kind of took it and ran with it, and that's kind of like my cybersecurity hacker persona now. So that's where that name came about.
That's nice. Funny that you mentioned like just the word hacker is always just so funny to me. Yeah. A little bit, just because, let me see, who was it? Shout out to Shamika. Shamika was on the episode that I had about cyber threat intelligence. And I posted my video from last week with me, Eric, and Rose. And we just talking about representation in cybersecurity. And she did a brief story time on her TikTok about how she was on a trip, on a vacation, and people were talking about what they do. And then when she said what she did, some guy that was just looking in almost choked on his food and almost died because he was surprised, you know, that she was in cybersecurity. Because I think everybody, when they hear cybersecurity, they think about like Mr. Robot or like people in the basement with hoodies on to stay with their moms and stuff like that. Like, it's such a negative connotation. Speaking of what I just thought about, and I haven't said in a while because that's not what I currently do at work, but just the negative connotations of whitelist and blacklist is horrible. I'm glad companies have moved on to saying, you know, allow list and block list instead of white and blacklist. Like, it's horrible. Like, why is the blacklist bad? Why is the whitelist good? Like, and I didn't really think about the one time till my coworker kind of pointed it out to me. So that was pretty, you know, funny. But not to go on a on and on about that because we could. What?
Yeah.
So briefly, you know, you kind of told us who the Pentest Princess is. What's your background in, like, what led up to, you know, wanting to go get that security plus and then wanting to pursue a career in cybersecurity? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So I have been in tech for 4 years now. I initially started my tech journey back in 2018. When I graduated high school, initially, I wanted to be a nurse. So I went to college and I started nursing school. And as I was going through nursing school, I realized, like, I don't like this. It wasn't for me. I was telling, you know, everybody around me, like, I don't think I want to do this anymore. And they were like, oh, well, all nursing students go through that. Like, it's just a little, you know, period of time. You'll get through it. It'll be fine. And I'm like, no, like, I really don't want to do this anymore. But I didn't have a backup plan. Like, it was nursing or nothing for me. So I went to my mom and I was like, Mom, I don't want to do this anymore. I think I need to, you know, take a step back and change my major. And she was like, okay, you know, like, my mom was super supportive. And so she was like, you know, you have to do what's best for you. You know, think about, take some time, think about what you want to do, you know, explore your options. So I finished out that semester of nursing school and I had a little break. I took a summer break. And so over the summer, I started looking at my school's curriculum and like their different degree programs to see like, what could I switch to? I knew that I wanted to still pursue something. I knew that I wanted a career. I just, you know, at that time, I didn't know what it was. So I started looking into their technology programs, and I saw that they had a cybersecurity degree. And I was like, okay, well, you know, let's look into this. What is this about? Because I've always been like the family computer person. So I'm not foreign to a computer. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, let's take a look. Let's see what that is. Let's see what it's about. And so I changed my major and I started the cybersecurity degree program back in 2018. And that kind of was set the foundation for me. At that point, I still didn't really know a lot about cybersecurity because, you know, I was just starting out that degree program. So I was still doing like the basic computer classes and stuff like that. So around that time was when I started doing like my first help desk role. And so I used to work for this contracting company that would, you would basically do like support roles for Fortune 500 companies under that shadow company.
And so he's a subcontractor.
Yeah, pretty much. And so that's kind of how I got started. I started doing help desk for two different Fortune 500 companies, and I really enjoyed it. And so then I kind of pivoted. I wanted more, you know, responsibility. I wanted to kind of dive more into being in IT. So I switched and became an IT support specialist at Wells Fargo. And I was there almost 2 years. So this is 2019, 2020, going into 2021.
Okay.
And pandemic then I time. Switched. Yeah. Pandemic time.
How, and briefly, I don't want to interrupt, but since you said you were doing IT support in 2020, how was that with the pandemic, with dealing with end users?
It was, so working at Wells Fargo, when I was doing IT support, I was doing IT support for their banking customers. So I was already kind of used to, you know, the cadence of that work. When I became an IT analyst towards the end of 2020, which that I was working at TD Bank then, that was with actual TD employees. So it was different, but it was still kind of the same cadence. And I learned a lot in my IT help desk roles. And so I kind of always tell people, like, it's okay to start from the bottom, because those foundational skills that you get in IT mm-hmm. and help desk, like, I still do things from help desk now as a security analyst and a pen tester. So I feel like those roles, those, you know, a lot of people try to frown upon doing help desk roles, but I feel like they're really important. Like we have IT help desk for a reason. So during the pandemic, I'm not going to say it was difficult, but you know, everybody was going through stuff at that time. So I just kind of think of it as a piece of my journey. And then when I was an IT analyst, that was when I kind of kicked up a notch with cybersecurity. I started doing a lot of research and I realized that a lot of people, when they get into cybersecurity out of a degree program, they don't have any certifications. They don't have any, you know, like hands-on experience. It's like they're fresh. And I didn't want to be in the job market with other cybersecurity graduates that are fighting to get their first job. So I wanted to take a step back and I said, okay, let's try to get into cybersecurity first before we finish the degree program. So that way we have certifications, we have experience, and then we have the degree to top it off. So the end of 2020, that's when I took a break from my degree program. I started looking into like actual cybersecurity jobs to see what were they looking for on the job descriptions. And a lot of the time I saw, you know, certifications like Security Plus, CYSA Plus, you know, things of that nature. And so I started writing those things down. I'm like, okay, well, if we're going to get into a cybersecurity job, this is what they're looking for. These are the type of foundational skills that are necessary. And so I just kind of, that was when I really started making my plan. And I started looking into cybersecurity roles, like the, you know, different jobs within cybersecurity to see like, okay, if we get in, what do we want to do? You know, like, I don't want to just get in and then be, you know, lost. So I'm like really thorough when it comes to making plans for myself. So I took like 3 months and I just was doing research every day. I was, you know, meeting different people. That was another thing. I noticed very early on, networking was really important, having, you know, organizations to be a part of, having mentors. And so this was around the time that Clubhouse got really popular. this was around the time that Clubhouse got really popular, like the end of 2020, early 2021.
Yep.
So I got on Clubhouse and I joined every single cybersecurity group there was. If there was a cybersecurity talk, I was sitting in that audience. I was taking notes. I was meeting people. I was, you know, and that's how I found my current mentors was through Clubhouse. And that's how I found a lot of the people that I, you know, call friends or peers now was because of Clubhouse and eventually Black Tech Twitter.
Yeah.
So that was my plan. I started looking into cybersecurity roles and pen testing at the time when I looked at it, I don't remember what it was called on that particular website, but it wasn't pen testing or ethical hacking. It was something completely different. And I looked at it and I was like, this is what I want to do. This sounds really interesting. And so that's kind of what I stuck with. And at the time, I did not know pen testing was like this shiny gold coin in cybersecurity. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that it was extremely sought after and everybody wants to be a hacker. Everybody wants to be a pen tester. Like, I didn't know that at the time. I just thought it was cool. I thought it was something that interested me. So when I've actually, you know, like I said, got into cybersecurity groups and started networking with different people, I saw how many other people were also interested in pen testing. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, I've got some competition here.
The best.
But,
the
you know,
best.
Nevertheless, nevertheless, I knew that was something that I still wanted to do. So I kept pushing. And so early 2020, by that point, I had mentors. I kind of had started a plan on how to pivot from IT into cyber. And I kind of had gotten a flow of, okay, you need to do this first, then you need to do this, then you need to do that. So I started learning, you know, basic networking principles that are, you know, anything that I wasn't already familiar with doing help desk. I started getting on TryHackMe and, you know, learning Linux and getting comfortable behind the command line. And at the same time I was learning, you know, basic hacking principles, I was also going through Security Plus to learn basic security principles. So that was like a 3-month period that I was like, I would be on TryHackMe like 5-6 hours a day. And then I would go and study for Security Plus, and I would be studying like 6 hours. Like I was all in. Like I knew this was what I wanted to do. And so I was putting every ounce of effort that I had to get into cybersecurity. Now, when I decided that I wanted to be a pen tester and I was going through all of that, you know, studying for basic security principles, I had this notion in my head, like, my first job, I'm going to be a pen tester. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not going to do help. I'm not going to work in a SOC. Like, I don't want to work in a SOC. And it's funny now that I look back on it, it's like, girl, you don't even know. But like that's what I had in my head. And it was like, as I saw that, you know, working in a SOC is not what people think it is. It's a lot of work. Right, right. Like,
and before you go on, I'm going to stop you right there so we can get back into that. But I felt like I wanted to ask a question about the nursing thing, because you're probably the first person I've had that's been on here that said they, you know, went to school to be a nurse, right? And mm-hmm. I have a lot of nursing friends. I used to always ask people too a lot of times when they said they want to be a nurse. I used to say, why? Because I know that most of the people that want to be nurses don't need to be nurses just because they aren't good with people. I've experienced nurses not being as nice as they need to, like, you know, my loved ones and stuff like that. And that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Certain cities, like my hometown, it's not a lot of opportunities to do a whole bunch of other things. So a lot of women decide mm-hmm. to go be nurses just because they know it's a good paying job, which is fine.
Yes.
But also, I know what nurses go through, and as much money as they get paid, sometimes that's not even worth it for the crap they got to go through, you know? And just think about it, if you probably would have been, let me see, do you think you would have been finished with clinical by now?
Yeah, I would have been graduating right when the pandemic started.
Right.
I would have been miserable.
Exactly. You know, that stuff was crazy for them. And, you know, it was just good that you decided to shift focus, or, you know, like I tell a lot of people sometimes, like, okay, cool. If you want to do healthcare, cool. But, you know, hey, look at something that's, you know, tech related in healthcare, you know, well, give you a little bit more mm-hmm. flexibility with your family, and you'll be in need, because there's always a need for, you know, healthcare stuff and tech. And then the fact, but I think what benefited you though, was like, you were able to get experience while going through school with the help desk stuff.
Yes.
And for me, I mean, I did my last work studies with my boss, and I'm trying to get him on here too, because he was the IT director at my college, at the College of Business. He set up like all the infrastructure and everything. So he's like super smart. He'd been doing this stuff for mm-hmm. years. I used to work with him, and it wasn't necessarily help desk. It was more, what would you call, IT assistant, student, something like that, workers or whatever, where we just like go in, and they had like the smart podiums, or they needed some stuff done mm-hmm. to their computers, admin, RAM, you name it, all that type of stuff. But that was one part of it. And then going to be a subcontractor and help desk like right after graduation. Because just like you, I didn't. So this is why I have like empathy for like some of the people that are trying to get into cybersecurity and stuff right now. But part of me doesn't, because I'm like, y'all have way more accesses to resources that I didn't have. Like you mentioned Clubhouse and Twitter. That wasn't a thing in 2013. That wasn't a thing. Like it wasn't a lot of people I could turn to figure, hey, how do I get in cybersecurity? The best / mm-hmm. worst advice I got was like, hey, you know, get your Security Plus. And then right after that, he had told me to get my Ethical Hacker, which was stupid. It just was overpriced test that didn't show me nothing. But anyways, just like you, I've realized, I was like, if I have this cert, at least I may fare better coming out of school. So I got like the summer before I graduated needless to say, it didn't help me that much because I didn't have a strategy. And what you outlined is you had a strategy. You looked at the roles. You pretty much, without me having to ask you the question, you did what I tell people all the time. If they want to have a consultation or whatever, or they message me and say, well, hey, did you look at the roles you want to land and use the job description mm-hmm. for your study guide on what you need to learn? It's like absolutely. One of the simple yet most effective things you could do. I think the hard part for people is they don't know what to look for, like what they would like to do. And that's what I typically help them with. And, you know, just to not ramble on, like how you were talking about pen testing and everything. I have people that come into, I want to do red team stuff all the time. And I'll be having to try to say, like, you know, I hate to break it to you. I'm not going to step on your dreams, but it's rare to get an entry level red team position. It's just super competitive. It's hard. It's not really an entry level role because, you know, doing red team requires you to know a lot unless you've been hacking for years. Like, shout out to my guy, Xavier. I don't know if you saw that episode, but that's the one that we saw my, at the hackathon. He hacked the MacBook that like was running all the stuff for the hackathon. So, like, unless you like that, like, and like you're like that, like it's gonna be hard to really stand out against, you know, some people that might have been doing that stuff since they were like teenagers. And that's what a lot of people don't understand about red team. It's best to just kind of get in where you fit in and make some acquaintances in the company and then see if you can move over to the offensive side. But that's my little spiel. Now we'll go, let me do this. Let me see if I can find it on here if it's gonna play. There it is. Now let's get back into what you were talking about. Like, you know, you thought you weren't going to work in a SOC and how, like, hey, working in a SOC is very different than what I thought it would be.
Absolutely. Yes. So, oh Lord, I'm trying not to go on a tangent.
Go ahead. That's what this is for. Because I build off of what you say.
Gotcha. So yes, it's funny. I'm sure at the time when I had that conversation with my mentor, I'm sure she laughed in the back of her head, but she didn't want to crush my dreams. Mm-hmm. So she didn't say it. But I remember telling her out of my mouth, like, I want my first cybersecurity role is I'm going to be a red teamer. I'm going to be a pen tester. Like, I'm not going to work in a SOC. And then I realized, while going through, you know, after I got my Security Plus, boom, I'm applying to jobs now. I'm going to become an entry level candidate right now. So I was interviewing and I realized they're not looking for somebody who doesn't have experience. although I have an IT background, you know, I'm still trying to get my first cybersecurity role. I'm trying to get my foot in the door. I have to get in, as you said, get in where I fit in. So I noticed a lot of people, they get into cybersecurity as a security analyst or a SOC analyst. So that's when I kind of took a step back and I was like, okay, we know you want to get here, but in order to get here, you have to do some things in between. You need to become a security analyst. You need to work in a SOC. So I had to kind of like humble myself and be like, okay, this, in order to get what you want, you have to do this. So even going into my first security role, I still had it in my mind that, oh, this is only a stepping stone. You know, I'm just here to do the work. Like, and then I actually like got into the work and I realized one, people on the outside have a very negative connotation about what security analysts or SOC analysts do. Mm-hmm. And I feel like until you actually do that work, you just don't know. And I fell in love with security operations once I got into my first SOC role. And it made me realize also, as a pen tester, working as a security analyst, you're just on the opposite side of the fence. So me working as a security analyst makes me a better pen tester. I can't evade defenses that I don't understand. Mm. Like, I can't, you know, like, I can't attack what I can't defend. Yeah, like, I can't attack what I can't defend. How is somebody going to pay me to be a pen tester on a contract and they want me to attack their infrastructure? And I don't even understand what their infrastructure is. I don't understand what EDR solutions they're using. I don't understand what SIEM tools they're using. I don't understand how their alerts work.
Yeah, you cooking.
those are things that you need to know. And that's why I absolutely love MITRE and ATT&CK framework. Because if you go on the MITRE and ATT&CK framework's website, as you're going through the attacks, it tells you how to detect them and vice versa. Right. Bread and butter. MITRE and ATT&CK is like my bread and butter.
When we had our, when I was doing SOC stuff, our SIM, like the rules all would be developed based off of, you know, MITRE ATT&CK framework, as well as the signals that go into EDR, like all the stuff was predicated off of that for a reason. And of course, for compliance and other things that the company want to make sure you're doing it according to that. But yeah, like if you understand these things, you can, you know, you're will be eventually a better pen tester. Oops. Mm-hmm. Just like a lot of times, you know, you'll see somebody doing some red team type of stuff. And a lot of times, like for my experience, I see somebody doing something and what's underrated, because sometimes people make working in a SOC harder than what it is, but it could be as simple as you see somebody doing something and you look at their job title. Are they supposed to be doing this? Yes or no? Talk to them. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I'm doing some testing. Absolutely. And sometimes it's like, oh, I've never been contacted before. Because a lot of times people don't know that, you know, the SOC is getting probably almost auto logs. Except like with they segment like insider threat stuff. I like insider threat like slightly. That's another thing that I probably try to get somebody on here about that's insider threat, because people don't understand like nothing they do on their computer is not seen. And I just want to share that with them.
We see everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before I left, I helped put with the report. It's like a list of users, and I had to put them in a lookup list in Splunk. And pretty much I needed to get everything they're printing out year to date, you know, in a report, and send it to the insider threat team, because I forgot what they did. Yeah. But they're just things like that. But it is dope. So speaking of SOC, let's have just a little bit of fun. What EDR and SIEM tools do you use at work?
So right now, because I just switched roles or switched companies. So right now we're using CrowdStrike, Splunk, which we didn't use Splunk.
What did you use before that?
So now I'm going through the Sentinel.
You're talking about Azure Sentinel. And I was thinking about Sentinel 1, the EDR, when you said that. Because that's one of CrowdStrike's and them competitors too. It's kind of bringing up some steam. Okay. Look at you. I actually want to do a lab and install my own Sentinel and throw some logs too to see how it handles it.
I liked Sentinel. Most of my IT work was Microsoft based. So I was already used to being in the Azure environment when I got into my last role. So it was just kind of like, oh, well, I'm just learning these new Microsoft tools. Yeah. But Sentinel, Defender.
Defender is pretty,
I think it's pretty
cool. Yeah. Defender. And we used to use the 365 like email compliance. So like, that if you had that in the environment and seeing people click on like phishing links and stuff like that, you can actually just look at what it actually was.
Yeah.
And so definitely. So what would you say is, we'll say the top three alerts that you work right now? Like, what are those?
Oh God. number one, phishing. That's number one. Number two, um, I'd say, well, we, so at my new job, we are an AWS environment. So, lots of different AWS like alerts. And then
I know the biggest one we used to get was S3 buckets made public.
S3 buckets. If there's a instance that has RDP, SSH, or Telnet open, we see that. I actually had a 3-day conversation with a sysadmin about an instance that was that had that open, and he was trying to justify why it was open, and I was like, "No, it right. needs to be closed." Like, yeah. So we won't get into that, but yeah. So that, and then. I'll do one that I was working yesterday. Anytime a root user account is being used on AWS.
Yep, because not supposed to be used.
Yes, not supposed to be used. So those are the three that I see the most in my current environment. In my last environment, I worked for an MSP. So we had about 25 different clients at the MSP. But a lot of the alerts that I would see in the old environment was LOL bin activity. We would see potential brute force attacks. A lot of the clients that we had were like federal or so like that made it government probably easy, contractors like and the, stuff like that. So.
Their yeah. environment probably was locked down a lot.
Yes. And so I would see a lot of that. And then what else would we see? There were so many different alerts that I would see. It's funny. Like I thought moving one, I'm not going to say I didn't like working for an MSP.
It's okay. You can say it.
It definitely gave me. I didn't like working for an MSP. It was just, it was a lot going on. Clients don't really respond to tuning very well. And yeah, I'm glad that I got the experience because now I know what I don't want. You know, I know what environments I don't want to work in. But yeah, like working. And then also like, we just really didn't get to do a lot. Like, and I guess that was also why even leaving that job, like the expectations of a SOC still in my mind were like, oh, you know,
right?
We don't do a lot. But then moving into my new environment, and it's like, yeah. I work for one company.
And that's what so. I try to tell people a lot of times, the difference between like, for example, Optiv was an MSS. However, we also had Fusion Center. Mm-hmm. So also part of the Fusion Center. And we had one big client. Let me see. Oh, you ain't on the chat. I'll tell you who the client was afterwards. But
okay,
we didn't deal with multiple clients like the other part of Optiv did. So we got to cultivate, you know, that SOC and do different things that typically you wouldn't do if you're on the MSS side because you don't have a lot of time to do anything. But just look at some. Oh, let's escalate it to the client or whatever. That's about it. We had a lot of stuff to do.
Yep.
With tuning playbooks, use cases. We had like, I don't know, it's fun. Like, at your current company now, do y'all have access to CrowdStrike University?
Yes, I went through all the glorious CrowdStrike University training.
Did you sign up to get your CCFR?
No.
Yeah, it's a cheap. And the test is easy. And what that's going to do is this free game is that you start getting just some CrowdStrike certifications on your resume. You could potentially just be a person that's working with CrowdStrike and probably just getting paid more just because you know how to do CrowdStrike. Like I have CCFA. Like I was approached like, oh, they want you to manage CrowdStrike. I was like, man, I ain't never did it, but I can. Yeah, because they made us get the CCFA at work, but really we should have been getting the first responder and the threat hunter from there. And the sucky thing about it is that you can't really get access to CrowdStrike University unless you're like at a company that uses it. Cause I tried to do it on my own.
Yep.
And then we also got hooked up with like a lab environment. So that made it even easier to study. Like the stuff you're doing, I was going there and doing it in the lab environment. Y'all might have one. Look into it and ask about it.
I'm gonna have to look into that.
We got we had Tanium training, so I got like some. It's somewhere on my computer. I got some stuff from Tanium. I don't know. Do y'all use Tanium?
I don't.
Tanium's pretty dope. It's an EDR solution too. It's not as good as on cloud yet, but it's pretty dope. You ask questions. Like you might say, give me all processes for, you know, our host or X amount of hosts or whatever. And it gives you, but it's the way that it has to word it helps you out. It's pretty cool. We used to have that in the environment. We had EPO. We had Trend Micro, deep security for like a lot of our cloud stuff and like those servers. So yeah, I got to touch like a lot of tool sets, which another reason why I like telling people like SOC stuff is because if you get in a SOC that lets you touch a lot of different things, you can figure out what you possibly want to niche into as well, because there's so many different things you can do. Absolutely. You can move into detections. You can say, oh, you know what? I really like working with the SIM. I like doing that stuff, like scrubbing the logs, only putting what we need to put in there. So that's why you like, it's one of the best kept secrets. A lot of people just don't know once they get in there. When they get in the actual sock that does work, they're like,
Yeah.
Because some socks get over, man. I remember one sock, I have a client, they was paying him pennies. And I was like, really? I don't know why they're doing that. That's why people don't stay. People don't stay at a sock because the dark side of it is, if a company don't recognize, like, hey, your sock is vital, then they won't listen to their analysts. They won't pay them right. They won't get bonuses or nothing. Mm-hmm. And you just be looking at a revolving door of no consistency. I see it at a lot of companies. So,
yes.
But I also thought you was going to say when I asked you about the top three attacks, I'm surprised you didn't say anything about authentication.
Yeah. No, that is top three as well. It's not top three. Well, right now, I don't think it's top three in my current environment, but it was definitely top three in my last environment.
It was
for sure.
It was up there. Mine was like authentication, malware, and I think like AWS stuff. And that's just because we had the rules where, hey, you know, unrecognized travel, all those different Microsoft rules that we had kind of like tweet.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In our environment, though, most of the time they didn't care if something failed, unless it just was like every day and we was like, we need to like look into like, you know, this specific IP address. But if it failed, whatever. If our tools did the job, it was like, okay, cool. Because one thing is, if you worry about everything that's failing, you will be super busy chasing a lot of stuff, and it kind of, you'll probably end up seeing like it's a waste of time because it's failing. Like, let our tools do what they're supposed to do. You know, just get the users and put them in security awareness training if they click links and everything else. For some of the phishings, if we look like the site was a harvester, we would just go ahead and reset the password. Because we had another tool that was like on Exchange that could tell us if they clicked it or not. But if you didn't, we was like, you know, worst case scenario, they just get their password reset and they'll be fine. Unless it was like a VIP person. But when I was with Goldman Sachs, we used Area 1 security and Proofpoint. So Proofpoint used to let you know if they clicked it or not. And they had it integrated with Phantom, where you could potentially find whatever that, what was that, message header, whatever, see if who all got it. And then find those people and you can pretty much research it like that when you're doing your analysis and all the different sandbox stuff. So that was pretty cool using it like that. But the next thing I'll probably ask you is, I haven't asked this question in a while, but how has it been for you being, you know, a Black woman in tech? What's your experience been like? Do you notice any, like, I guess some of the little microaggressions, how you found people to be helpful or only as helpful until, like, hey, you're like a threat to them because you're moving up? Like, what's been your experience with that?
So, definitely In my first, I would say my first three roles in tech, I always had super supportive managers, super supportive team members. If there were any microaggressions, they weren't like out there, you know. I never had anybody that I felt was hindering my success. Now, when I became an IT analyst, I definitely felt microaggressions from management, which is ultimately why I was like, okay, we're going to pivot now. Like, I can't keep experiencing. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So that was the first time I felt like I didn't have supportive overhead. My last role, which was my first security role, my manager was great. My team members were great. I was the only Black woman in the entire company of my last role. I was the only Black woman in the entire company. And obviously the only Black woman on the security team, too. I wasn't the only woman, but I was the only Black woman. And so my team culture was super great. My manager was super supportive, or I thought he was super supportive, because when I first got into my last role, I told him from jump, like, I want to do red teaming. I want to be a pen tester. And he was supportive of that. If I needed connections, like he would refer me to different people who he felt I could, you know, elevate my career. And he even told me, like, you know, eventually we're going to start offering pen testing at our company. I want you to do it. So right around the time that I left my company, he had just offered me a red team role. I see. Severely underpaid, and I knew my value, and so I didn't take it. And it's funny because when I left, like, he didn't speak to me on my last day of work. Absolutely. he didn't even speak to me on my last day of work, because I guess it was like the flip script, like the flip changed with him. He was super supportive at first, and then all of a sudden he wasn't. So I don't know if it was one of those situations where it was like, I'm supportive as long as you do what I want you to do.
And you'll continue to possibly run into that. Yeah. I got wind about some stuff like that when I left the previous company, and I was just like, wow, okay.
Yeah, it's just kind of like, yeah. Dang.
Nobody's a fool. Like, that's the thing. A lot of times they expect people to be fools. Like, I'm not no fool. I know what people a red team make. You're not going to.
Yep.
No, you're not going to underpay me like that. I'll just go somewhere else. And that's that.
Yep. And our entire team was already, we all knew we were being underpaid. They basically wanted me to take the red team role for like $5,000 more than I was already making. And it's like, what? And then it was like, they wanted me to do red teaming for our company. And then eventually they wanted to start offering it as a service. So I know that you guys are already getting very, very well-paid contracts. If you start profiting off of, and mind you, I was the only person at my company who even knew how to do a pen test. So you need me to offer the service, but you don't want to pay me for the service. So it was just kind of like, I can't. I can't. I know they were sick. No.
When they found out, I don't know if they found out where you went, but they all, like, people always look like one of my guys. I did a consultation with, he was telling me about the company he's worked for. He was working for one of those sock companies that was getting over. They was paying him pennies. And once he went to his new company, old people from his company been looking at his profile on LinkedIn, trying to see where he went. So you can always block him.
Yep. Yep. Every day. Yeah, absolutely. It's funny, like, I told some of my coworkers that, like, I was cordial with, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't going to hide it. Mm-hmm. When he asked me where I was going, I told him, like, and so I still get the such and such view your profile on LinkedIn. I think it's funny. I don't feel any type of way about
think
it.
You can refer me to Zoom. Mark my words.
I'm happy that I left. Now, granted, it was a hard decision because it was like, do I take my dream role, but I'm underpaid, or do I move into another analyst role at a better company? And enjoy the journey. I'm not in a rush to be a full. Yeah, I'm not in a rush to be a full time pen tester. I've already sat in on a pen testing contract and got paid for it. So I have pen testing experience under my belt. And I feel like for me right now, working as an analyst and then just doing pen testing contracts, that's comfortable for me right now because I'm still doing what I love and I'm still getting the best of both worlds.
That's right, Hannah Montana.
I'm just not in a rush, you know?
You said the best of both worlds.
Not Hannah Montana. I did. But yeah, and I think that when people reach out to me and they see like, oh, you're a pen tester, you're a security analyst, you know, how do I get into pen testing? I always tell them like, don't rush, because one, you need to know what you're doing when you get into these pen testing contracts. I saw a tweet about 2 months ago, and every time I look at it, I die laughing, but it's true. This I don't remember who tweeted it, but he was like, if you mistype one thing on MMAP, you're going straight to jail. And it's funny.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's so true. Like, you mistyped that IP address, you are going to jail. Like, you need to know what you're doing. This is not just, oh,
yeah,
type, hack, hack, pew, pew, pew. Like, no, you need to know what you're doing. This is not a game. Like,
at my old company, we couldn't even use Nmap because it would affect some of the business of the company. If, you know, because somebody, a previous provider was running Nmap and messed some stuff up. And so, no, you couldn't even run it, like, if we want to find out more. So you're definitely right. And with red teaming, I don't even think people understand, like, the part of it that's not fun when it comes to the paperwork side and the documentation.
Yes. The legality part of it is very important because you need to make sure you are not doing anything that's not in your SLA. You have to read that documentation and know, like, okay, if the company, the client that you're doing a pen test for, they say we've got 10 servers, 500 endpoints, da 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 da. This is within your scope. You need to stay in scope. You get out of scope. Now you got to go to court because you touched something that you didn't have permission. You have to have permission. That is the big part of pen testing. It's more paperwork than it is exploitation. Like, and people don't realize that. Like, when I was doing my last pen testing contract, we spent like a week or two doing the report and, you know, gathering all of our evidence. That's the biggest part. That's what they're paying for. They're not paying for you to sit behind the keyboard on a Kali Linux machine and try to run SQL. No, they want the report. They want to see it in writing. They want screenshots. They want evidence. Like, they want to see what, you know, what type of vulnerabilities they have on their infrastructure. That's what they're paying for.
You know, so people will find out quickly what they like and what they don't like. They just see the fun parts on TV. They don't know the whole story at all.
Yes. And it's not all glitz and glamour. Like, you as a pen tester, like you cannot also, you can't be complacent in this type of work. You are going to be constantly studying. There are vulnerabilities that come out every single day, and you have to know what they are. You have to know how they work. You have to know how they're, you know, you have to know every piece of the puzzle to do this type of job. It's not like, oh, you get into a pen testing role and you're just coasting. You cannot coast in this job. You are always going to be learning. You're always going to be researching. You're always going to be studying. So if you're somebody who does not want to study, who is not, you know, comfortable with being a constant learner.
Yeah, I totally agree. I tell people that all the time when it comes to tech. Like, hey, I know y'all want to get in, but what happens when you get in? Like, how do you stay in? I think the last question I'm going to ask you, and I forget to ask this like on a lot of pods, right? But since you're, I guess you can consider yourself new to the SOC space, I typically try to ask these people, and this is not to get super in detail, right? But for entry level, what could a SOC analyst expect salary wise entry level? And it can go from anywhere from the minimum you've seen to, you know, the most.
Okay. Minimum. Also in this, you said don't get detailed. I won't. Okay. minimum, I would say 60K. Right. And that's like, yeah, maximum, I would say 120. I've seen everything in between that when I was attempting to get in, when I was interviewing, and then now that I am in, I've seen anything between that. So, there are SOCs that pay six figures. No. Does every SOC pay six figures? No. Don't expect six figures when you're trying to get your first entry-level SOC role.
Right, unless you already have the experience and been doing internships and stuff like that. Then you could get your money.
Yes. Yeah. Unless you have applicable experience.
I've seen them go over 120. It just depends on what the role is inside of the SOC. So, and that's one of the things Eric and I and other people will probably have some episodes on. It's like how you can really make good money in a SOC analyst. People don't know. Absolutely. Since 2020, I think SOC analyst salaries have risen because they find out how important it is. And I'm happy for that because, like, we're in the trenches. Like, without us, a lot of stuff will fall. And companies won't exist no more.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. And like you said in your previous episode, we are not a security help desk.
So it's Saturday afternoon and we all got stuff to do. If you could lead the listeners or the viewers with like three things with them on there, like their tech journey, kind of what would that be?
Do what you're passionate about. When you are truly passionate about a role, you go further in my eyes. That's the first thing. Be passionate. Whatever you do, be passionate about it. Two, network. Network your ass off. I got into my pen testing contracts and my first security role because somebody knew who I was and they vouched for me. So networking is key, and not just in security, but in all aspects of tech. Networking is key. It's sometimes, yes, it's about what you know, but it's also about who you know. You knowing certain people allow you to get into rooms that you may not have been able to get into before. So I'm a firm believer in networking. Join all the groups, you know, get on tech Twitter. Meet people, establish those connections, and not just not just, don't just reach out to people for connections, but reach out to people to make genuine relationships. People will remember you a lot better if you can establish a relationship with them versus just hitting them up. Hey, I see you work for such and such. Can I get a referral? Like, no, like get to know that person, see what they're working on, see what they're doing, like, you know? And so that's to network. And then number three, know your worth. Know your worth. When it comes to your career, know your worth. Know what skill set you have, what that equivalents to compensation wise, so that you do not get underpaid.
Nice, nice. Pretty sure everybody those appreciate that. And the last thing is, now I will have your socials in the description, but for the listeners right now that can't look at their phone, how can they keep in contact with you?
You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is Pentest Princess, all lowercase. What else? If you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, send me a DM on Twitter. I'll put my, you know. So yeah, just I'm mainly on Twitter more than anything. So that's how you guys can reach out, you know, connect with me, have a conversation.
You guys already know how to keep in contact with me. It's been another episode of the Textual Talk, where we talk about all things in tech and representation of our Black people. I almost said color. Oh, man. This has been another episode, man. I really appreciate y'all for tuning in. Y'all really have been helping the channel and the podcast grow. So until next time, let's stay textual.